This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Mark, Matt Marcus. Sorry about just Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Capp there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
It really was a terrible baseball game yesterday. I was there. It was awful to watch. It was awful to just even be associated with in any way. Rather than going through it over and over again ad nauseum, because you know what happened, right? The offense did nothing. The pitching was not good. And the defense was probably worse than any of it. It was an ugly, ugly game. And unfortunately, it doesn't stand alone, right? It was an ugly offensive series in general. They scored, 17 runs in 7 games? It was an ugly defensive series in general. Defense cost them in at least 3 games. And pitching-wise, they still only have 2 quality starts through their first 7 games of the season, which, you know, for this vaunted rotation, is probably not what you're looking for. So obviously, just a little way into this season, it's not going the way it's supposed to. There's good news. Good news is that you're still 3-4. You found a way to win a couple of those games, even if you didn't have your best stuff. But you're not playing the way this team ought to be playing. Panic? No. Cause for a little bit of, you know, concern, or at the very least trying to figure out what's going on. Yeah, I think that's fair at this point. No one's going to like say this team now is out or needs to make drastic changes to its roster or anything like that. But I did find myself thinking and writing about last night, SeattleSports.com. All right, what do you do if you're Scott Servais? Because what he's done the last few years is to be very patient, right? To be very calm, to wait as long as possible. And ultimately, he was rewarded for that patience. We all were, right? 2 years ago, it was the epic win streak and ultimately the playoffs. Last year, it was the ridiculous August coming off of the incredible July and a team that still, unfortunately, fell a little bit short. And so do you want to wait and wait and wait and hope that you catch that same, you know, that same ride again? You can. You got to have some level of patience. Or if you're Scott Servais, do you show a little bit of a different side of you? Do you mix up the lineup? Do you make some changes? Do you, you know, turn over the water cooler and yell at the team? Not that I think that's particularly effective. Do you do something? Well, I wrote about it last night, but I think I missed something. And I was thinking about it this morning. And part of what I think I missed is, okay, well, what exactly is the problem? Because if you can identify what's going wrong, then maybe you can identify the best way to fix it. And I kind of identify a couple of different problems, and they don't all require the same solution, okay? One of the biggest problems you have is that your stars, your power hitters, are not hitting that way. Julio Rodriguez has not had a great start. Thankfully, he did have that one, you know, walk-off hit, but it sort of masked what has been a slow start for Julio. He has no home runs. Polanco has really struggled. He has no home runs. Mitch Garver has actually hit the ball well when he's been out there, but he has 0 home runs. And, you know, those 3 guys, throw in Cal Raleigh, who's hit the ball okay, but unfortunately, 0 home runs. That's 4 guys, no home runs. You're expecting those guys to be 4 of your 5 top power threats on this team, along with Mitch Haniger. They have to hit home runs. Is yelling at them going to help? No. Is benching them going to help? No. Is moving them around in the lineup going to help? Probably not. So at least for that problem, you probably have to be patient. You probably got to sit and wait it out because those are the guys that you're counting on to lead this team. Unfortunately, same with the pitching. You need quality starts out of your pitching. This is what this team is built on. Luis Castillo's 0-2. Kirby's 1-2. Gilbert, 1-1, he's going to go again tomorrow. And unfortunately, both Bryce Miller and Emerson Hancock, 0-1. Is yelling at them going to help? No. Are you going to send them down and bring in somebody else? You don't have anybody else. You're waiting on Brian Wu, but you're not going to send down Bryce Miller. You're not going to juggle your pitching rotation. Mm-hmm. You're not going to decide, hey, you know what we should do is throw Trent Thornton or Austin Voth tomorrow. Like, you're going to stick with your rotation and you're going to be as patient with them as possible because you know the talent that you've got there. And there's no amount of, tantruming that is going to change that. There's right. no button that, you can push.
Hancock's one of them, by the way.
Not with, no, he's not. Not for quality starts.
Oh, quality starts. Okay.
I'm just talking about quality starts. He won the game. He gave them what they needed.
Yep.
But it wasn't a quality start.
Yep.
They have just two. Through seven starts. And I kind of expect a little more out of this rotation. But you're not going to yell them into changing. You're going to have to wait for their talent to take over because that's what it does. Now, there's two other problems that we've seen so far this year, and those maybe are of a little bit different concern. One is the defense, and the other is sort of the general sloppiness. And I think those are maybe a little bit different. The defense has been awful. Guys, I know I talked about the defense in the offseason. It was a concern of mine heading into this year that you made a lot of sacrifices off defensively in order to help your offense. And you can live with some of that. As long as the offense produces. Well, the offense obviously did not produce through the first week of the season. They're dead last in the league in terms of OPS. They're not scoring runs. Obviously, that's a problem. But the defense has been worse than you would have wanted, than you would have been willing to accept. I'm willing to accept that the defense can take a step back. What I saw yesterday was not indicative of what you should hope for from any major league team. On any given day, that was abysmal. It really was. And again, you've got issues, you've downgraded in some way at second, third, left, and right. JP did not have a great defensive year last year. And, we'll see what it looks like this season. But, he kicked a ball in game one, maybe could have been a double play. And yesterday, I don't know whose fault that was with Polanco, with the two of them colliding, but it was just sort of like the image to stick with all of the other sloppiness. The base running, they've been thrown out at the plate now a couple of times, neither in situations where it was particularly necessary or warranted. So I guess that's the stuff that if I'm Scott Servais, I'm not going to wait. I got to nip that stuff in the bud. And I don't know exactly what that looks like from Scott. It may mean, it may mean yelling. It may mean benching. It may mean talking through the media. It may mean, I don't know. But I was talking to somebody yesterday, and I thought this was a very good phrase. At a minimum, you must control the controllables. You can't control Julio Rodriguez when he's going to hit home runs. Sorry. It'd be nice to do, but you just can't do that. Eventually, he'll hit them. You can't control whether or not Luis Castillo has a good outing. Right? I mean, he's going to do his best, and you can control the effort, but you can control the concentration. You can control the base running, the focus. And, when you see defensive lapses like they had yesterday, when you see the reaction that occurred on the mound, those are things that are within your control, unfortunately. And that's the thing that maybe was more concerning than anything else. I'm not going to freak out because they didn't hit for a week. I don't like it. Right. I'm going to notice, and we're going to have eyes on a couple of players because of patience levels a little bit lower than it's been the last few years. And heck, you just went on and on about how you're going to have this great start, a new philosophy. And now we're seeing it not occur. So I'm upset about it. But like there are times where you have to know, look, your hands are tied. There's nothing you can do. That's the team you are. You need Julio Rodriguez and Cal Raleigh and Mitch Garver. And I'm not calling those guys out, but they didn't hit any home runs. You need them to. When they do, you're going to be a lot better baseball team. You need Luis Castillo and George Kirby to have quality starts. Same with Bryce Miller. That's what you're counting on. But you got to fix the sloppy play. You have been so clean the last few years. You got to control the controllable. What a fantastic way of phrasing it. And that's where I think maybe Scott could take a little bit more action than maybe we've seen him in the past, especially this early in the year. All right, take a quick break, come back with everything you need to know, including something that I think has the possibility of changing sports in a really positive way. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. up first.
Awful baseball game yesterday, about as bad as you're going to see in virtually every part of the game. The pitching was really not what it needed to be. The bats were anemic, and the defense was really, really probably the worst of any of it. Eight different plays that could have been made in this one. Here's one of them.
There goes the runner. First swing and a ground ball to first underneath the glove of France into right field. Here comes Roque on to score. Kwan running will make it to third. Around to second base goes Jimenez, who hit it. Up with the ball as Haniger gets the throw to the plate. So Andres Jimenez with a hard ground ball underneath the France at first, reaching to his right. And the Guardians now lead 4-0.
I really enjoy this. I'm not sure who was making the cuts of yesterday's game, but whoever it was labeled that. Roque scores on play. Top of second. Yeah, I think that pretty much describes it. Like, it's not an error. Technically, it's a hit, but there were a lot of those over the course of the game, and they all added up to a brutal, brutal loss. So, the good news, that game is over, as Scott Service knows. Time to snap and clear.
That was not any fun. We did not have a good effort today, and you shouldn't be in a game when you play like that. We just, really, from the get-go, obviously, George has been so consistent over his time here, and they had a game plan. They had a game plan. They were going to stay super aggressive. They were going to swing. They're going to put the ball in play, which they're really good at, and we didn't make some plays behind them. So that certainly got away from us early, and before you know it, we were out of the ball game.
I will say that's a tough matchup for him. He's always in the zone. They are a team that loves to make contact. You put those two things together. Probably not a surprise that Cleveland was able to have his number, but everything else, that's within your control and really just not good enough from the Mariners yesterday. So off to Milwaukee. They do have the day off today to kind of compose themselves, regroup, and get back to it. Logan Gilbert will try to stop the bleeding. And oh, by the way, as rough as things feel today, and they do, they feel pretty lousy. They just lost two in a row. They weren't particularly competitive in either of them. Their offense was lousy for the entirety of that homestand. They're 3-4, not 0-7, right? The Astros have not had a great start. The Rangers have not had a great start. And oh, by the way, their third baseman, Josh Jung, is going to miss, 8 to 10 weeks or so with a wrist injury that may continue to bother him over the course of the season. So it's not like anybody's running away with your division, but here's your opportunity. Go out and make something of it on the road in Milwaukee and then Toronto.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
I know it's easy to look at college football's system and know that it's not sustainable. The constant transfers make it near impossible to build a program with any continuity, but going back to the old was never going to happen either. So enter this so-called Super League, a plan concocted by a group of power brokers, college presidents, and pro executives. It would essentially seek to put together a league of 80 teams in 8 conferences. 7 would be the old Power 5, plus a few others. And then the final conference would be for smaller schools and would have like a soccer-style promotion relegation aspect. The playoffs would then be chosen by division winners and wild cards rather than by voting and ranking. Doesn't that just make sense? Oh, and by the way, the players would get paid directly by a collective in a collectively bargained system. Works for me. In fact, it's so smart, it probably won't work. Plenty of challenges and resistance from the leagues. All of them have complicated media rights deals with all the major networks. Obviously, that would need to be untangled. Plus all the looming problems with lawsuits that are seeking billions in damages for players, predating the NIL system in general. But I really do hope that smart people work on this together. I think it's what the sport needs. I think it needs a compromise solution that would retain the elements of college sports, but also adequately compensate the talent and ensure that you can build a team, which is really not something that most coaches can do right now.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, it's also been obvious for about a month now, but it finally became official last night. The Kraken are eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs. A 5-2 defeat. It wasn't quite as bad as the Mariners game, but it wasn't like that much better. They did not play very well last night at all defensively. Pushed around physically, gave up a hat trick to Trevor Moore. Yeah, there wasn't a lot of positive. Grubauer was not very good once again. Shane Wright skated more shifts than anybody, so at least he's out there playing. Wasn't nearly as good as his first effort. He finished with no points, no shots, and a -1 on the night. So that is everything you need to know. quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk show.
That's a good point that they're 3-4, not 0-7. Because if you didn't know that and just took a sample of what the internet has to tell you,
right?
Which I know is not indicative of the entire fan base, but that is definitely not the start a lot of people wanted, and they've catastrophized it.
Yeah, and I would say, look, I'm not. I hope no one's hearing me sit here saying patience, patience, patience. It's April 3rd, April 4th. Don't even think about it. Don't even worry about it. Everything's fine. It's, you know, 1 week of the season. I'm trying not to do that because, honestly, I think there's some valid concerns about this team. I do. I don't know that they're just there because of what I saw in the first week. I had some concerns about this team going into this season.
Well, I think it's because if you sat here and said, like, what has been most encouraging or what am I most excited about after this first week?
Right.
There's not I think that's what it is. There's not really, like, one aspect that they've – I mean, Logan Gilbert's first start was great. So was George Kirby's.
Yep.
That's
Ty France had a nice start to the year. Kudos to him. He's kind of hit the ball pretty well. It's nice to see Julio come up with a huge hit in a big moment, something that we've been kind of waiting to see. But
it
overall,
feels like there should be more than that, right?
Absolutely. It was a rough week. They didn't play well this week. I mean, honestly, I think you would only look at Saturday's game, maybe, as being the only one they played particularly well in. I mean, even the losses, they were pitched well, or the wins, rather, they were pitched well, but they didn't generate much offense. Right, they win a 1-0 game and a comeback victory after only scoring one run in the first 9 innings. And, okay, fine, Dominic Canzone hit that 3-run shot, but even that game was kind of sloppy. Right, that should have been a blowout, and instead they allowed it to be close late. So they just haven't played very well. That doesn't mean that they're not going to play very well, but it's absolutely worth pointing out that they've not played well. Haven't played well offensively, haven't played well defensively, and honestly haven't pitched that well in their starting rotation. Bullpen's been the best thing they've got. That's been the best thing. So they're going to have to find a way to change that. And that's why I was saying earlier for Scott, you got to kind of divide it into the things that you can press buttons for and the things that you just have to wait. It's frustrating. I know. Baseball's annoying. I hate when you have to just be patient.
But it's really long.
I hate when you just have to wait for guys to get it going again.
I'm just saying it's easier to be patient if there's at least like one positive to be like, at least that's working really well. So maybe just let's take that step.
You want the ultimate positive?
Let's have one really good defensive game. Let's have one game where the bats go off.
Here's the most positive. You know what? I've got one thing that's incredibly positive. I'll tell you what it is next. I got a little football chat. Then Brock's going to pop on for Blue 88. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Oh, this is going to be fun tonight. I'm excited for Luda. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports here on 710. Maura, Justin, and G. Scott and I are all going to see Ludacris tonight. So G's going to come in about 30 minutes and drop some bows on us, apparently.
It's a good song.
Spills. Matter of fact, candy paint Cadillacs
kill. Or we don't need you rapping along. What was it, Tribe Called Quest, that you rapped like?
No scenario.
I won't do that. The song too the other day.
Yeah, Luda's a little too complicated. I'm not gonna try to go down that road. But very much looking forward to tonight. All right. So you guys wanted Maura. You wanted something positive. Poor Maura. She's down in the dumps. She's not feeling great about the way the Mariners season has started. She's sad. You can see it in her face. She could barely.
I'm just saying we keep telling everyone it's early and not to panic, but I think the reason that it doesn't feel good for people is because there's not a lot to cling to right now.
Because they haven't played well, right? They've really played poorly. No other way to say it. They've played poorly in virtually every phase of the game. Here's the good news. You wanted the good news, Maura? As usual, when people want positivity, where do they come? Straight to me. Your fountain of positivity, a virtual river of optimism. You come to me. Here's the good news. The Mariners have played like garbage, and they're still 3-4. They've played bad baseball, and they're still 3-4. And I know that you're going to say, oh, well, those are two obvious things. It's true. They are. Anybody could put those two things together. I'm not pretending to be any kind of a genius here. But they've managed to squeak out wins in 3 of 4 games despite not getting what you would expect from guys that absolutely will deliver a lot more of it over the course of the year. They've not really gotten anything from Julio yet. You guys think Julio's going to hit zero home runs this year? I have a feeling he's going to hit more than that. That's just me. Do you think Mitch Garver's going to have zero home runs this year? I don't know whether he's going to be great or not, but I think it's going to be more than zero. You know who else I think is going to have more than zero? Cal Raleigh. You know who else is going to have probably have more than zero? Polanco. Right? Like, I don't think that this is all you're going to get from those four players.
The home runs we got from JP, Dom Canzone, Mitch Haniger.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And Dylan Moore, the pinch hit.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
They got four home runs.
A pinch hit home run.
By the way, same number of home runs as Teoscar Hernandez. It's a true story.
I mean, we're supposed to be doing good news here.
I know, but you can't write
this
that.
It's not a river of deceit.
But honestly, I think that is good. Like, they're going to hit a lot better than this. They're not going to end the year with a 550 OPS. They might not end the year at 900, but they're not going to end the year with a 550 OPS. They're just not. First of all, I don't think any baseball team in the history of the sport has ever had an OPS that low for an entire season. I would be very surprised.
Had that going for us.
but that's kind of my point. Like, what we've seen, you're not going to see much worse offense than that. In fact, you will probably see significantly better offense because that's the way the game works, right? Because players have a tendency to eventually get to their average, when you don't hit well for a little while, generally there's a hot streak on the other side of it. The question is, when does it come? And does it last long enough? And are there more of them over the course of the year to help you out? I'm not concerned about Julio. Is anyone concerned that Julio's not going to have a good year because he had a bad week? I'm not.
Soft takes.
Thank you, Colleen. Yeah. Is anyone concerned that Mitch Garver's not going to hit a home run this year? I'm not. Are you concerned in any way that Cal Raleigh's going to go a whole year without a home run? Because I'm really not.
Are you concerned Logan Gilbert is not going to have, or sorry, not Logan.
George Kirby's going to keep doing that over and over again?
And not going to have any quality starts?
All right, like, I'm not concerned about that. Those things will happen. It's just the way the game is played. Am I a little concerned about Polanco? Yeah, a little bit. A little concerned.
And what was it that gave you that? Just a gut feeling? Did you see it? Did it look like you missed a step or something that made you go, hang on here?
I think it's just, I've always had one little concern with Polanco. And that is, well, obviously the injuries, which haven't struck in any way yet. Why did Minnesota give him up now? That's the only thing. It's just been sort of nagging for me with Polanco is, okay, the Mariners have said they've been after him for 2 or 3 years. They've wanted him, and now Minnesota finally gives him up. And I know there's a pretty good story about the glut of infielders that they had in Minnesota, which made him available for the first time. Fine. I'm sure there's a lot of truth to that. I'm not denying it. But it also just, there's a little piece of me that says, I looked at his numbers the last 2 years. They weren't spectacular, right? They were, I told you, they were pretty similar to the average of Colton Wong's numbers the 2 years before he came here. And there's a part of me that worries that Minnesota feels like, all right, we got his best years. See you later. We're good now.
Yeah, I get it.
And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if you ask me of the things we've seen that nobody's liked, that's probably the one where I'm like, I'd really like to see a little more from Polanco quickly because I don't have the history with him that I have with Cal Raleigh, that I have with George Kirby, that I have with Julio, right? You just don't have the history.
Right.
There.
And I'm not going to allow the Colton Wong association to poison my initial feelings on a Polanco.
I'm not associating the two of them together.
Not.
They're
I'm
very
not
different people,
allow
different
myself
players,
to
everything.
Do it because I can see Mariners fans doing that and being like, oh, seen this before. And it's like, it's not the same guy. It's not the same story. He was here for 3 months and he was gone. Let's not let it poison the future of it.
But I do want to know, you know, Minnesota let him go, right? After a long battle of them saying, we're not going to trade him. Okay, fine. We'll trade him. I'd like to know why that is. And the defense through the first week has not been especially great. The range is not especially great. And if the bat comes around, which it could, it'd be fine. You won't worry about it because he'll be hitting all the doubles. He was a doubles machine throughout spring training. And hopefully that continues once he gets back into the swing of things, maybe going on the road, maybe going to Milwaukee. I don't know what gets him going, but hopefully one of those things does. But again, you asked for a positive take on the whole thing. That is it. That nothing that you're expecting to happen this year has even happened yet. So they're 3-4. It was a lousy week. I do think that there are some sloppy issues that need to be cleaned up. And if I'm Scott, I'm thinking about the best way to do that right now. But again, I'm not going to bench my best players. and my best players haven't done what I need them to do yet. Mm-hmm. They're not losing because the Mariners acquired Luis Urias in the offseason. That hasn't helped necessarily, but that's not why they're losing. They're losing because the guys you're counting on to be the nucleus of the team just unfortunately haven't hit or pitched particularly well. And then you throw in the sloppy play, and that's just not going
to
get
425 thinks these are just Jerry's talking points that he texted them to you. So
it's, that would be nice.
Too bad that you're not allowed to have your own thoughts on
this. Man, how easy would our show be if really, like, someone thought, because someone thought Kyle told us what to talk about.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Jerry, like, if everyone just texted us and told us what to talk about.
It is the nice thing about my life is I have none of my own original thoughts.
Yeah.
I just wait for everyone else to tell me what to think. Look, I am, you know, I can kind of go back and forth and straddle the line a little bit on this one, and I'm sorry for that, but I told you, I don't love the way the Mariners have started this season. Been very clear about it. Wrote about it, put it in writing. I don't like the way they've started this season at all. I'm probably, you know, more concerned than I normally would be on April 4th of any season because of the history. But let's also be reasonable, recognize that they're 3-4, not 0-7, recognize that none of their guys have done at all what you're expecting them to do this year yet, and that there are still, what, 155 games left to play?
Exactly.
That's kind of a lot. 155 games are still left to play. So, yeah, that's kind of where the Mariners are.
2-6. You're admitting our offense is just home runs. That's not going to work if Julio only hits 25.
I don't think that's what I said.
Not what you're saying.
But you know me. I think power matters.
Yeah.
I think, and if you want my criticisms of the offseason, I think they went away from that.
I just want to see the unlock of a rally and not the rally kill, which we saw happen twice in the homestand. She's like, you have your best hitter coming up to the plate and you're sending somebody home with no outs? What? Like, and there's a few pieces like that that are like, okay, I get it. There's some dust. There's some things to shake off. There's some chemistry to be made. There's some rapport to build. I get all of those things. But when you're put in a position where you can actually have a rally to be sustained, let's let it continue instead of try to force things.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, that desperation, you know, this is one of the things we talked about at the beginning of this season. Whether it's through the fans or through the players, is you can, I said it earlier, you can kind of stuff everything from last year back in a box, but the moment something goes wrong, that box can open back up again, unfortunately, right?
Totally.
Right? We're not going to find this. Yeah. This is what I wrote in February. We won't find out how successful it's been. That I'm talking about Scott's kind of, you know, transparency tour, if you want to give it a name. We're not going to find out how successful it's been until adversity strikes. In a 162-game season, that's a matter of when, not if. Vibes change according to the success of the team, but it'll be up to Scott to keep the boiling lava from erupting to the surface. People were mad at the end of last year, understandably so, both fans and players. And the fans, some of them, mad instantly because it didn't take much to get them back to that spot this year. And as for the players, I don't think they're mad yet, but George Kirby sure looked frustrated yesterday. I don't blame him. And, you know, this is going to be now up to Scott to kind of keep everybody in the right spot, but also to get some of that sense of urgency that you see by making the right decisions at third base, by, you know, playing solid defense and by not getting, you know, not playing sloppy.
Yeah. And some of the first things that turn old bad teams that I've been on around is when everybody gets mad.
Yeah.
And like, finally, okay, we're all mad. Let's start over.
And maybe,
like, we've all hit bottoms. Cool.
And maybe that's what this is. Maybe today is the day off, a little refresh, a little reset, and then you come back out tomorrow and you start playing the kind of baseball we all expected to see from the start of the year. All right. Let's go to Brock a little bit early because we've got a few extra minutes with Brock. We'll do a slightly early version of Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Well, good morning, Brock. A little Blue 88 today. It's nice to have you, albeit briefly. I know we're still going to get a draft profile from you today. But got a couple of football questions, and I guess we'll start with this one. Diggs trade yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is that really a sense of the wide receiver market? We talked to Matt Miller yesterday. He didn't seem to think that necessarily it would be indicative of what it would be for other receivers. What did you make of the whole thing?
Yeah, I think looking at any individual deal and saying, oh, yep, because Diggs went for this, DK Metcalf's going to go for that. If Diggs went for this, Tyler Lockett's going to go for that. I think you've always got to be careful, much like you do in free agency, but it does give you a little gauge for where the overall market is. I think there's two other factors much bigger in that market than the deal with Diggs yesterday. And those two factors are T. Higgins and Brandon Ayuk. Both guys that are young, you know, you referenced yesterday as we talked about this Diggs news when it broke on our show, like, well, I mean, he's 30 years old. He's much older. He's worn out his welcome in two different places. I mean, is he really? He's not really that good of a comp for DK. Well, I think a Brandon Ayuk and a T. Higgins are a much, much better comp. And guys that are out there that are a little frustrated with their current organizations, a little disgruntled with their pay. They want their next payday, which DK already has. So I think figuring out those two guys, and frankly, you know, they're kind of a mix of DK. T. Higgins is DK light. He's not quite as powerful and as strong and as fast, but he's been a super productive player. And then Ayuk is just a tremendous, tremendous route runner, better than DK Metcalf is as a route runner.
Neither of them, though, have really been the number one guy.
Neither of them have really been.
DK has.
That's true. I think that is a fair sentiment. So again, it's not, and I think this is why, if this is still on the table or on the burner at all, you are going to make a case like that. And you are going to say, no, DK has been paid. No, DK has been a number one. No, DK has largely been healthy. Yes, DK has some, you know, tendencies at times where he wants the ball and is going to make that abundantly clear. So I'm not saying it is impossible. I'm just saying between this receiver group in this draft in 3 weeks, between a couple other young guys that are pretty darn productive, and Ayuk, as I said, is a route runner and a technician, is at an even higher level than a DK Metcalf, I think it's going to be a challenge for something to get done between now and draft day.
All right, question number two. So this wasn't on your sheet, but I got to ask you about it anyway, because what I read yesterday about this Super League, Brock,
I love it.
Like, what's not to like about this? What am I missing? Everything about it, I know it'd be hard to unravel the current TV deals, and so clearly that's a gigantic challenge to getting it done. But in terms of the thought behind it, maybe you could explain a little bit of what they're thinking, and why wouldn't this be the perfect solution?
Yeah, this is that what they're thinking is taking, what, about 60, 70 of the teams that have all been in the Power Five, including Notre Dame and SMU, throwing those two private schools in there as well.
And I assume that would include Wazoo and Oregon State, right?
I would think so. Yeah, I would think to get to that number and create just a pro league for those guys, a collectively bargained, a unionized pro league, and kind of separate yourself from then the other 60 or so teams that are playing Division One football right now and in many of those other conferences. And then what do you do with basketball? Right? I mean, on its surface, right, I understand it. Like, on its surface, I think you talk to most basketball coaches, Salk, as I have over the years, from Scott Ruick to Mike Hopkins to Kelly Gray, they all say the same thing. Tara Vonderveer, like, hey, man, we get it. Football is a different revenue generator. It is a different money maker. It's a totally different entity that, you know, requires about 5 or 6 road trips a year compared to every other sport on the campus. Hey, go ahead and treat them a little bit differently. But then when you do, what happens to all of those other conferences and all of those other sports, and do they share? That's where my concern always is, Mike. You know, when you sent that to me yesterday, I said greed is undefeated. Greed always wins. And my concern is like, oh, no. These schools are going to then share with all the rest of the sports. Oh, really? The collectively bargained agreement, the union for the football players, is now going to say, yeah, we'll take these monies and then we'll put them back into all of the other Olympic sports on all of these campuses. Are these even student-athletes?
But why couldn't that be part of the collective bargaining process?
Are they even student-athletes?
I think they would be in this. Yeah, I think there was a lot that really made sense in here. First of all, the other part of it was 10 more teams would be in an 8th division that would be relegated or promoted, right, depending on how they did each year, which I think is a great way to bring more teams into it and give a path to having more and more success, both monetarily and on the football field. And I think that's a really valid concern, but Brock, why not just write that in? Like, hey, because there are college presidents who are part of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. If they're advocating for their schools the right way and for the system, you say, all right, with the money that gets generated, you take X amount off the top, it goes to the other sports, and then the rest is shared in the right way between the schools and the players.
Yeah, I think you're going to see, is there an appetite for that? You have pro football, obviously, and there's an enormous appetite for those 32. Is there going to be a similar appetite for a semi-pro league, which is what this then becomes? It's, you're right, this college
football. Yeah, but it's still tied to colleges.
It's tied to colleges, but now that you've got employees, now you've got athletes, now you've got unions, now you've got contracts. No,
but now you also are able to get rid of guys going back and forth in the transfer portal. Like, you could actually have a commissioner and a playoff system that makes sense, scheduling that would actually make sense. You could really fix a lot of the problems with college football.
Well, you certainly could. And like Chip Kelly, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 months ago, talked about having a commissioner. I mean, some of these things on the surface just make logical sense. Mm-hmm. Right. It's kind of like, I don't know, building a subway system before you build a city, Seattle. Like, you know, they did it in New York and they did that in Boston. And you have all the infrastructure under the ground. Trying to come back after it's all been built, a little difficult. You could take down a bridge, right? You could do some parts about that. But to try to go all in and build that infrastructure when the other one's been in place, hey, I don't want to be the old man yelling at the clouds and say, this is stupid, keep it the way it is. I don't know. There has to be some level of common sense. There has to be some level of change. There has to be some level of leadership. We've talked about this a lot. This just feels like a huge step with a whole bunch of infrastructure between TV contracts and networks and a college football playoff that's already gone I mean, we'll see. It's certainly not going to happen tomorrow, but at least get some conversation going towards what is actually sensical.
All right, question number 3. One other thing we did hear yesterday in chatting with Matt Miller was his thoughts on Sam Howell, which were not particularly positive. In fact, he said he would take not just the top 6 quarterbacks in this draft over him, but even threw Spencer Rattler in there as well. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I would not take a Spencer Rattler. To me, that feels like a big reach. An even smaller guy that has even bigger issues from a decision-making standpoint and has bounced around a couple different places already. So, yeah, I would not feel comfortable with that. The one thing that really jumped out, well, multiple things. That was the obvious. That was a headliner. That was a story written at Seattle Sports. Yeah, that he had him in the 70s as a prospect and obviously not nearly as high as any of these 6. Okay, I think that's understandable. The traits that these guys have, the background that these 6 have ahead of him, okay, that's all fine and dandy. But let's also remember, like, you're paying him $1 million a year, right? I mean, you get him for the next 2 years here. You get him with 17 games of experience. And you get him, Salk, I think, in a system. Sam said this to us last week when he joined us. This is a perfect system for me. This is a great fit for me. This is a college space spread system for me. This is what I was really, really good at, what I really thrived at. And I really thrived throwing the deep ball. That to me, once he said that to me, well, it didn't alarm me, but it brought some real questions, Salk, into this season and for Ryan Grubb as he transitions to the NFL. And maybe this is personal. The one thing I felt like I could really do as well as anybody was throw a deep ball. I could throw a post, I could throw a go, I could throw a deep corner, I could, you know, as a lefty, I could sling it out there and get that ball to turn over, and I loved throwing the deep ball. You know what's really hard at the NFL level? To throw the deep ball. Because A, it takes time to block these edge rushers that are phenomenal, and B, every coach worth their salt and every system in the league says what? Hey man, this is a shortened game, there's minimum possessions, as long as we don't give up a big play, everything is close. Everything comes down to the fourth quarter, so stay over the top and do not give up those big plays. Do not let them throw it over your head. It is hard to do that at the NFL level, so that will be an adjustment. Yes, it was about Howell yesterday, but it certainly got me thinking on a bigger picture, a bigger scale of how Grubb is going to create all those shots and all those deep throws and all the things that he loves to do, he thrived with collegiately, and Penix absolutely, you know, starred at. Can you do that well at the NFL level, and what does that look like? That's a story that's going to unfold.
Good stuff. That's today's Blue 88. I don't know. It's funny, man, not to belabor the point. And maybe we can talk more about it next week. But just that when I read the Super League thing, I said, man, this does accomplish a lot of the goals that you have, right? You've always wanted to have somebody in charge of the whole college football system. This gives you that for scheduling, etc. It ends the transfer portal madness where it's impossible to build a team because you never know how long anybody's going to be there.
So people are these players then are going to be locked in.
To some degree, or maybe there's some, you know, mechanism for transfer, but it isn't the, you know, it allows common sense to prevail and be negotiated as opposed to having it be either the awful draconian system it was before where it was so hard to do, nor the current system where it's essentially wide open, no rules.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to be just like so illogical and so old man to not understand that there's going to have to be some massive change.
Well, there has to be some compromise.
The bottom line with that is that then Super League assumes that a Fox or an ESPN, the biggest entities in college football, are going to be willing to pay for this and that this makes the most sense. You know, part of the reason this whole thing got to where it got to and down to just two conferences was because Fox said, well, hold on a second. It's Penn State. It's Michigan. It's Ohio State. It's SC. These are the ones that drive us. These are the ones that get us 3 or 4 million viewers. These are the ones that create the revenue that make it make sense for us. Is if you go back to 70 teams and you play in a semi-pro league and you strip away some of the rivalry, some of those huge games. So I don't know if that is as appealing to those entities and to those networks. Could it be appealing to outside money? You know, that's ultimately where my mind went right away. Like, well, if Fox
investors, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. If is it appealing to hedge funds? Is it appealing to Saudi money? Is it appealing to money outside of, you know, the two major networks right now? Again, there's a lot more to unfold. The status quo isn't good enough, and it won't stay the same.
All right, good stuff. I know you got to run. We're going to come right back. I think I'm trying to drag G in here to preview tonight's big concert, Ludacris, tonight. Justin, Maura, me, and G, Brock. So should be quite a night. We'll talk to you. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Okay, man. See you, bud.
All right, and in fact, G is going to be in next. I've spotted him, and he's going to come join us. Will he help me figure out what to wear? What is he cooking for everybody? What will tonight be like? G's going to stop by next. I'm Brock and Salk.